Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, good afternoon from Florida's Space Coast, where spring break is definitely in full force along the beaches here. It's a beautiful day. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the March 27th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, on this program, we've looked at space operations, space history, space policy, space education, and even space entertainment. Well, today we're going to be talking about economic development as it relates to our space program, and we'll be doing so from a very local perspective as Linda Weatherman, president of the Space Coast Economic Development Commission, will be joining us in just a few minutes. Of course, you are invited to join in the program today, and I highly encourage you to do so. No matter what we are talking about, I'd be happy to take your space-related questions and comments and discuss what's on your mind, especially if it has to do with NASA's proposed budget and the future direction in space. To do all of that, just give us a call, 768-1240 or *1240 for all local AT&T wireless customers. If you're listening to us online at WMMBAM.com, then give us a call. The long distance number 321-768-1240. Or send us email to spacetalking@AOL.com, spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, if you pick up the paper this morning, you'll see that there's a reminder about the Save Space Community Rally that is to take place in 2 weeks on April 11th, just 4 days before President Obama is to come to the Kennedy Space Center to tell us, well, who knows what. I want to encourage all of you to attend that rally if you're able and demonstrate your support of the space program. But I also encourage you to think hard during the next week or so about exactly what message it is that you and we will be trying to send that day and why we're sending that message. You know, I've been studying ever since it came out. I've been studying the budget proposal, watching the congressional testimony, reading the often intense and frankly too often ill-informed rhetoric that fills much of the space-related online blogs, and thinking about what it is this country has right now in terms of space technology and space infrastructure and what it still needs to develop and for what purpose. And I've also been thinking hard about Apollo, about why we went to the moon in the first place, the role of government in that function and now. Why public support for Apollo began to vanish even before we really actually landed on the moon, and where do we truly need to be headed in space next? And then it struck me today, reading the quote in the paper from Brevard County Commissioner Robin Fisher, who is responsible for beginning the Save Space campaign, has been doing a great job, and he's talking about the message he wants to send with the demonstration on the 11th. And he said, and this is a quote, "We want the President and Senator Nelson to understand that the addition of one space shuttle flight will not keep America as the leader in space. Human spaceflight is what inspires younger generations, and we still need a goal, a destination, and a timeline." Now, I'd like to give the commissioner a call at some point this week and try to better understand exactly what he was saying. And I'm wondering, is he saying that just one more shuttle flight isn't enough and that we need to keep flying the shuttle? I certainly agree about the importance of space inspiring kids. But then he says we need a goal, a destination, and a timeline. I'm kind of wondering about that. I'm not ready to make any conclusions. I don't really have a conclusion yet, all of that said. I'm not sure yet. But I think I'm beginning to see some gems of wisdom in the NASA budget that's been proposed. Not completely convinced, but maybe more than I've seen before. I don't know. I need to study this a bit more, do some more thinking, and just see where this goes, see what people are saying. I don't want to say anything now, definite conclusions. I thought I had some conclusions, but I don't want to say anything right now that's stupid or that I'll regret. But I'm not. I'm wondering. I'm just wondering if there's something there that that we're not seeing beneath the rhetoric that is going on. Well, if you have some thoughts along those lines, I'd love to hear them. Even now, if you'd like, during the program, give us a call, as we said, 321-768-1240. Or send me an email, you know, now or this week, spacetalking@AOL.com. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you're thinking and what you see here about what's been proposed and where we need to go with all of this. Okay, well, before we take a first break, let's talk about a couple other little things that have come up in the news this week. Probably the most interesting thing is that that the Athena rocket looks like it's coming back to the Cape, to Complex 46. We've seen a few of these go in the, what I guess I'll call the modern era, and it looks like the rocket's coming back to do some more service for the military. It'll be launching off the pad that Space Florida is responsible for operating along with the Navy, and it's the old pad that the Trident ground-based missiles used to test off of, and Athena has done a couple of good flights from there. And I think that's great news. It's, you know, every job's important, as we'll talk about later with Linda Weatherman, and every chance that we have to bring new activity here is good. And I'm not really sure how it all came together yet, but to certainly do applaud all of those folks that are involved with that good news that we've seen in the news here this week. Florida Today, my old buddy Todd Halverson reporting this week, I think he's the only place that I've read it, Falcon 9 looking like it's likely to slip into late April. They were hoping to get off the ground here early April, April 10th, I think it was, or April 11th, just a few days again before the president would come. And it's looking like some issues have come up with the range termination system, some tests and some final approvals from the Air Force and from the 45th Space Wing. So it looks like some of that's going to get in the way and slip that launch to late April. And again, we're actively looking forward to that launch, that commercial launch from the Cape. Again, new people, new business, new operations, new way of doing things, and very much a glimpse into the future. And also remembering that, you know, let's cut them some slack, folks. This is a test flight. It's a first launch, and sometimes things don't go right, and we need to be patient in this business. Space flight is hard. Well, also what's hard, either to do it or to watch it, I'm not sure. But talking about space entertainment, did anybody catch Buzz Aldrin dancing on Dancing with the Stars this past week? Buzz is doing a great job. You know, he's out there, and if he can find a way to promote space, you know, then he ought to be doing it, and he is doing it. Now, people say he's out there promoting himself, but I've really come off of that kind of criticism in the last few years and really seen a very intense desire on his part to just share space with as many different audiences as he can and make himself available. I mean, we talked earlier how this summer he was on The Price is Right. He gave away a showcase on The Price is Right for the 40th anniversary of Apollo 11. And now he's Dancing with the Stars. And he did the cha-cha, and everyone loved him. He got a standing ovation, but he also got the lowest score out of everybody, 14 out of 30. Now, I'm not a big fan of this show. It's not one that I particularly watch. I certainly tuned it in to watch Buzz. And it looks like Monday of this week, we need to tune in to find out if he is going to be the first star eliminated. And even if he does, as I guess to paraphrase a quote from The Right Stuff, old Buzz did all right. So good for him. Real quick, the VSS Enterprise took its first captive carry test flight over the Mojave Desert this week. That's the Spaceship Two, the Richard Branson project to put suborbital passengers on their flights, $200,000 a seat. It's something that we'll see here from the Cape someday soon. I say let them go do it in New Mexico, get the bugs worked out, and then they can open up a second spaceport here and do the job and get it done. And by the way, the British have finally come around to forming their own space agency. They revealed this week they began operations on Thursday. The United Kingdom Space Agency, born this week. Another nation's got it figured out. Well, when we return, we'll be back with more. This is Jim Bankey. I'm here on WMMB. Join us in just a moment.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Bankey. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to join me today with your questions or comments. Or send us email to spacetalking@AOL.com. And before we introduce our first guest, let's go to Joe from Palm Bay on the air. Welcome to Space Talk, Joe.
Good afternoon, Jim. I was just wondering, I was listening to your opening comments regarding getting up there and attending the meetings with the President and Senator Nelson there. And, you know, just looking at the way things are going and the way this president responds to any kind of criticism whatsoever, I think that maybe getting in there and saying something against what he thinks is the almighty right might be a serious problem for the Space Center. Hell, he's liable to put a for sale sign out in front of it for us. I'm going to hang up and listen to what you guys have to say to that.
Well, you know, there you go. And there's been a lot of rhetoric both ways, you know, and can you say something bad against the president and have him expect to vote your way? Well, Representative Cosmos might think that way. She was against, for example, the health care during the first round of votes a few weeks ago, and then at the last minute changed her mind to vote for it, allegedly because she had had a meeting with the president or at least his advisors, and she denies the idea that she changed her vote because of the space program, because that the president promised her money or votes. And certainly I think there might have been some similar conversations that Senator Nelson's office has had with the president. He's not seen eye to eye at all the times, but he also voted for it. So there might be some arm twisting that way. I think what you're going to see when the president comes, though, is that you're not going to see – he's not going to see any protests. I think he's going to do everything right at the base at the KSC, right inside the security zone. And I think this public rally that we're talking about for the 11th is going to be the chance to really come out and demonstrate what you believe. I don't think he's going to come down and say no. I don't think the story is going to get worse. The story is either going to stay the same or it's going to be a little bit better. But I don't think at this point that anything that anyone's going to say bad against the president is going to have any effect whatsoever on what he thinks about the space program. But Joe, it's a good question. I appreciate your interest and your involvement in the show today. Well, let's move on. My special guest today in the studio is Linda Weatherman. She is the president of the Space Coast Economic Development Commission. And if I get my facts correct, she's served in that role for the past 16 years and is well-known, certainly, and respected along the Space Coast as the go-to person for advice and assistance and commentary. And if you're a reporter, a good quote on the local economic impact of anything having to do with the space program. She certainly does know herself or her stuff. Let me tell you, so much so that in 2007, among the many other honors that she has earned, NASA presented her with a Distinguished Public Service Medal, the space agency's highest honor possible for a non-government worker. And I don't know, because we were on the stage together.
That's right.
That's right. Linda, welcome to Space Talk.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on your award, too.
That's right.
So you're recognized also. And Jim, I appreciate what you've done to keep the awareness of the space issues, the opportunities and challenges for the public to know. A lot of us take this information for granted because we live it and breathe it in every day, but I really appreciate through the various mediums that you use.
That's great. Well, Linda, I appreciate those comments. Well, you know, EDC, Economic Development Commission, is not your normal space topic. We've been talking about a lot of other things, but, you know, that is such an integral part of what's going on in the Space Coast, always has been, and never more critical than it is now. And for the space-related audience that's out there, certainly, who know that the pointy end goes up and how turbopumps work and all that, they might not know so much about how economic development works or even what it is. Let's spend a few minutes. Let's give us a little EDC 101.
Yeah, appreciate the opportunity, because then we can go to specific examples later. But basically, we're a public-private nonprofit organizations. I'm governed by a board of directors. We're not unusual. There are a lot of EDCs throughout the U.S., and our job is to either mitigate a challenge that's coming up, like we did with BRAC, for example, and we can talk about that in a minute, but also to exploit economic opportunities that are there. Mm-hmm. We focus on manufacturing and high-tech relocation and expansion. We'll work with a company locally that, remember, in Brevard County, we don't have a lot of headquartered companies.
Right.
So we'll work with the local companies or the headquartered companies that represent the divisions down here to show what we refer to as the competitive advantage of doing business here. And I guarantee you, every day, there are other EDCs doing the exact same thing.
Now, you know, maybe a few questions about what EDC is not. For example, are you out there trying to get more McDonald's built or more 7-Elevens built?
No. The reason that we focus on the primary industries industrial base is because, A, it has the greatest impact on the economy. When the industries come in, the primary base of an economy, when those people come in and they create the primary jobs, that has the greatest economic impact, what then creates the need for McDonald's and the need for the retail, the second-tier industries.
So the biggest bang for your buck. So you're going to spend your effort on that company that's going to bring in 800 jobs,
right,
more so than 50 jobs.
Well, that doesn't really – the size of the company really doesn't matter. I mean, because what's happening now is a lot of small, medium-sized companies are making a move, and the bigger companies are in some places consolidating. So, you know, if you think about it this way, you'd rather have, you know, a number of 50-level companies, employee companies, than one 500 one, and if that shuts down, you're in trouble. So really, it isn't the size employment of the company. It's what they do, manufacturing high tech, because you can negotiate with a manufacturing company to relocate. A retail organization has to have the local dynamics. You only drive so far for a gallon of milk and not any farther. If dynamics aren't there, it's not going to happen.
So the EDC is doing this job now. How do you do what you do? What's a typical day? I mean, is it all just brochures and films and videos and commercials? Is it hand-to-hand travel? Is it all the above?
It's, you know, there's marketing, there's corporate intelligence. It's a variety and a blending of things. Some, we have, you know, different approaches to business development. Number one, it's working with consultants. There are a number of, you know, Fortune 500 consultants that work for Fortune 500 companies that are retained to look for relocations. It's working directly with industry associations and talking about what you can do, going to a trade show of, say, aerospace companies and telling the story of what you're trying to do, talk about incentives, talk about your labor base, talk about the facilities that you have in an area. Then when a company does make a decision, usually it's a blended decision. All factors have to fall into place.
Now, I know that economic incentives are a big deal. You know, tax cuts, tax breaks, cheaper property, whatever they all are. Is it the EDC level actively working those kind of issues? Is that where you start partnering with Florida Enterprise Florida or Space Florida or, you know, the more political oriented kind of groups?
Yeah, well, we have locally we have a Florida ad valorem tax abatement. If a company comes in and makes improvements to the tax base, those are only new improvements, there could be tax abatements on that. What we use that tax abatement for is then we match it for statewide programs, a program called the Qualified Target Industry Program. So there really is a match between the local community putting skin in the game and the state putting skin in the game. But a lot of these incentives are on the shelf. They're available. You need to meet the thresholds. They're clawback requirements if you don't meet the demands. And that's how they work out.
But so you're aware of those and you market those and you help people take advantage of those, but you're not necessarily making them up or lobbying for them or being responsible in that regard.
No, in regards to the state, if there's new programs that we see that a competitive state might have, like no taxes on electricity thresholds, then, you know, we'll work to try to get that passed. But we leave that mostly to our state partners.
Okay. And so you have a staff of what, 15, 16 people?
13.
13 now? Okay. And the question is always, do you have enough? And do you have enough resources? This stuff takes money, takes time, labor intensive, I'm sure. You know, where's the money coming from? How much are we investing in our future here?
Yeah, it is labor intensive. You can't just send out a brochure. I mean, you need to be on the phone talking to companies, making relationships, because you could be talking to a company and making a good case and their business plan doesn't require an expansion at that time.
Right.
3 years later, it could, and you've already planted a seed with them. So I always like, you know, you're answering the question of relocation before they even ask for it.
Okay.
And that's kind of what we did with CEV, too. I mean, that wasn't even on the table when they talked about both companies, Boeing and Lockheed Martin, but we were talking about it then. And that's when the whole case of, do you have the labor? Do you have the facilities? Do you have the incentive?
Well, and you mentioned, you know, planting seeds. Now, I know that when I was a reporter, it just drove us absolutely crazy that we'd hear something might be happening. You know, let's see. Back then, it was who was gonna move into the old McDonnell Douglas plant in Titusville. You know, what missile company? What secret company? Right. What, you know? Mm-hmm. What's Walmart? What, I mean, who? It was anybody and everybody. We'd hear rumors, and we'd give you a call, and it was basically no comment.
Yeah, companies require what's called a non-disclosure agreement. They're making a very important decision for their company. That decision, because it's the reason it's confidential is because they could be showing competition to another competitor. For example, if they're going to make an expansion into the Southeast, is that telling another competitor looking to access the Latin American market and there's competition there? There's stock sales that are involved in it. They don't want everybody in the nation calling them after they shortlisted companies. And it's just a private decision to the right time when the incentives come up and for public review. So early stages, they don't want it. If the worst thing you can do is talk about a company looking to relocate, and what they'll do is they'll just drop you from the list. Because when companies are looking to relocate, it's a process of elimination, not adding more communities. Right. They've got five communities, and if you're short-sighted for shortlisted for five sites, then theoretically every one of those sites would work. So the question they're asking is, what do these companies have that I don't want? And okay. So if you go talk about it, then you'll lose it. You'll lose your reputation in the nation, and this is a fiercely, fiercely competitive business.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's just scratching the surface of what EDC is all about. When we come back at the end of our little 5-minute built and hold we're about to have, we'll talk more with Linda about economic development space and some examples of success stories and challenges. But anyway, we're going to take a break here now. Space Talk brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and of course, you're listening to WMMB.
Call Jim now, 768-1240, or star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers.
And welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, you heard the numbers again, 321-768-1240, star 1240 for your AT&T wireless customers along the Space Coast. If you're online, you can send us some email to spacetalking@aol.com. And to remind you that during the week, you can follow us on Twitter. Again, the username is spacetalking. And today's program can be heard live online right now at WMMBAM.com, and a podcast will be available later this afternoon if Aaron doesn't decide to go out to the beach first. So, hey, let's check in the email, by the way. We did have a question from Ken, and actually this is following up from a conversation we had last week about the new IMAX movie, the new Hubble 3D movie. Ken didn't get a chance to hear the entire show and needs to be reminded to download that podcast and pick up all the details. But, Ken, your question about where can you folks see it on the Space Coast, he threatens to drive to Alabama to see it but would rather not. No, you don't need to go that far. You just need to go right up the road here to the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. They premiered it last Friday, I believe it was, and we'll be showing it continuously for probably the near future, certainly through the summer, if not beyond. The last time I saw show schedules, there was one showing late in the morning on every day, late in the morning, and then basically I think starting at 12:30 every hour on the bottom hour through closing, 12:30, 1:30, 2:30, 3:30, 4:30, and I think there was even one at 5:30. So part of regular admission to the visitor complex, you can go up there and not only see the movie but enjoy the day and get re-inspired and re-motivated about what's going on in our space program. And buy a hot dog and a T-shirt while you're there, too. Help those folks out. It's a good thing that money gets reinvested into their exhibits. Someday we'll put a space shuttle on display there. Okay, we're talking today space economic development with our friend Linda Weatherman, president of the Space Coast Economic Development Commission. And Linda, during the first half, we were talking about EDC 101. Let's do course 201 or 102 or whatever it is and take it to the next level. And let's start by talking about some specifics about what you guys have been up to. And let me ask you this question to move into it. Vision for Space Exploration announced in 2004 by President Bush. And the major part of that was we're going to shut down the shuttle program by 2010. This county, this state, this nation has known for 6 years that we were going to be done with the shuttle program by the end of this year and that we were going to lose these jobs and we needed to find something else for them to do. You heard that news. You turned white, and you looked at your budget, and then you said, let's go to work.
Yes, we did. And the first thing we did was get our hands around exactly what the Constellation program was. What was the vision? And again, in economic development, you can exploit opportunities. If there's an expansion of a company occurring, you need to find out what that company is. The first program that we identified was the CEV, the Crew Exploration Vehicle.
Right.
And we worked with both companies. Both
which, by the way, I'm sorry, which became Orion.
Right, indeed.
Got the name Orion, which we all know it popularly by now.
Right, or as the Orion. And what we were able to do is, in this case, when we talk about before, asking the question before it's even thought of, we were able to, by the county providing funds for us, to get people that were experts in this business, mm-hmm. Not Linda Weatherman, I'm a strategic thinker, so I realized we need to do something. We need to get some people. We hired Lee Solid and Marshall Hurd, which many know, and we should mm-hmm. be grateful for these two gentlemen. They started working with both companies, and you can imagine this big project, billion-dollar contract was something that was going to be low-key in our discussion, and really took them from not even considering the site of assembly work of the CEV to considering it and actually making a decision where. Because our argument was, the only elasticity you have in cost now is site of location.
Mm-hmm.
And as we got momentum going and companies, that both companies, to, again, they went from not even considering the site of location to actually putting it in their contract. Well, that allowed us then to go to the state and say, look, we got a fish here. You need to help us skin it.
Okay.
And the county put some funds into it as incentives, and the state did. And I guarantee you that had a lot to do with that. Prior to that, NASA was a major player by allowing us to work with the ONC building, get renderings done, get engineering work done on it, so we can show them specifically how that could have worked out in the production line. And we were able to secure it. And what I'm most proud of, it's the first time in the 50 years of the history of space in Florida that we brought assembly work here.
Yeah, and that is the important part, because normally you build the rocket, you build the spacecraft. Apollo, for example, was built in California, in Downey. And when it was ready to launch, it was shipped to the Cape to be checked out and launched. And final assembly took place in Downey. Now, sometimes they sent some of the work here. They said, well, let's do the final assembly here, then do the checkout. But it was never part of the contract. It was never part of the plan. It was always kind of a hurry up, make do thing. And that really showed us that, you know, and gave us proof that we can do that work here.
Well, the Delta IV is another example. Delta IV is where, now we didn't get the Delta IV, it went to Alabama, but that's when I want to point it out, where this EDC has always promoted the diversity of space industry.
Right.
Because people talk about, let's diversify the industrial base. Well, that's a lot easier said than done. What are we going to bring, biotech chemists here?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be immediately attracted here when we have a history of a different type of workforce. But what you want to do is diversify from within that traditional paradigm that you had. The Delta IV is an example. CEV were successful on it. And again, I think the moral to the story is, and we could take it to today's viewing, is we need to be smart enough, we, and when I say we, I mean us as a local community, as a state, to look at the programs, however we decide our national policy is going to be, and say, okay, of those, what programs can we exploit and work harder than ever before? Because we proved the first time out, the first program that came out, and the Constellation, we are successful. We can do it again.
So now we have this operations and checkout building,
mm-hmm.
Fully re-engineered, if you will, reconfigured for doing final assembly of the Orion spacecraft. And now we have this program canceled. Now, do you have what are the seeds you can plant now at this point? What's next?
Well, first of all, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be canceled. I mean, we still need to see what comes of it. We have
fair enough.
Okay, fair. President Obama's administration put his budget out. I just spent 2 days in D.C. Talking to a lot of people, and I don't think I have any particular keen insight or access, but I can tell you what I heard loud and clear. There was neither a completely full absorption of the Constellation program,
mm-hmm.
or really completely full absorption of the Obama administration's budget. So I think,
meaning that not everyone fully understands,
embracing it and everything,
okay.
like that. So I think there will be more, at least on the congressional side, discussion on what is this budget bringing to us as a nation, bringing to us to KSC. So if it doesn't happen, then we have a facility. Now remember, we have a facility that's been upgraded. You couldn't have went in that facility before. So
right.
this investment will not go unheeded. There are other corporations we could talk to. There's private companies. There's satellite manufacturing companies. So we'll certainly, you know, continue to fight the good fight. But I'm not ready. In economic development, you get beat down a lot and you lose a lot. But you've got to just keep fighting the good fight. And I'm not ready to put that on the table yet. And that's just me.
Well, and that's the kind of attitude you need. And earlier we were talking about, for example, the long-term work it takes, and a lot of times you can't talk about stuff, and so I'm going to ask you a question which maybe you can't answer, but it's, you know, what else is out there? You know, what else can we be working on in this area to essentially find work for these people that are about to be laid off?
Well, we can go into what's available in the space industry, in the satellite manufacturing, ground support, those programs that will come out of the budget that we have, whether it's phase two for orbital science, phase two.
Mm-hmm.
We had identified the lunar ascent module, the lunar descent module. There are going to be programs. It's not like, in economic development, all we can do is exploit what's there. As the programs come out, we need to be smart enough to be able to capture them. And if it's not a program tied to Constellation, which we had identified a lot because Constellation was a more mature program,
mm-hmm.
it's identifying those programs that come out, whether it's a blended version of Constellation and the administration's budget, or whether it's, one or the other.
And I mentioned at the top of the hour in my little opening that, I have been studying this budget, and there's some interesting wording, especially when I heard some testimony this week about some space technology development. That is just not kind of weird stuff in laboratories that we'll never see. This is stuff where they want to build it and fly it and test it in space. And automatically I start thinking some of this stuff's going to need to be assembled here, tested here, checked out here. Certainly will be launched from here. Those are great new opportunities for this that doesn't necessarily have directly something to do with Constellation.
That's right. Exactly. And here's how I think we should see it as. This now that we've all awakened to this challenge that we have, and a lot of us in this industry knew this was happening, but I think this awakening that's throughout the community
mm-hmm.
is a thing that we can capture and say, look, let's be better than what we were. And where before maybe we were operations and that was good and we're proud of it. Now we realize that, let's not just settle for that and let's keep what we have that's there because, we'll do launches whether it's 2017 or not. But let's aggressively go after, and I think we can do it as a partnership with Space Florida, other opportunities that are there that are going to be derived from the budget.
Well, and okay, so let me ask you this, taking a little bit bigger picture. We talk about these potential losses. We talk about potential gains and where this all might go. And we don't know all the answers yet. But what's the pulse of the economy in Brevard County right now? And we saw an unemployment number go down by a little bit this week. In the old days, and what I'm getting at, of course, is that after Apollo, it was dead.
Right.
And after Challenger, North Brevard certainly suffered horribly.
Mm-hmm.
And the talk has always been that we're more diversified now. Are we truly more diversified? I mean, if the worst case happened in Kennedy Space Center right now, what happens to the rest of the county?
Well, we are certainly more diversified than we were in the past. The problem is that a lot of our diversification was tied to the housing industry that grew. If you look at how our economic data was divided and where the growth was coming from. But we are in a truly deep and long recession. I could tell you that an average recession, if you look at the last four that we had this past century, about 12 months, maybe 9 to 12 months. We're in our 24th month. We lost about 0.5% of a labor base at the end of a recession, and we're up to about 2.5% already. So we're more diversified. It's just a serious economic challenges we have.
It's not going to be gloom and doom. Christmas isn't going to be really bad this year.
I think gloom and doom would have happened already.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, look, we're going to take a final break here. And when we come back, we're going to spend just a few more minutes with Linda Weatherman and ask her a couple more questions. And then we're going to wrap up with some other comments about what's ahead. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Space Talk. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. And with us for just a moment or two is still here Linda Weatherman, president of the Space Coast Economic Development Commission. Linda, we're talking about work that you can get, people you can get here, growing folks that are here, bringing new people in. But it doesn't all have to be just space with this workforce. You mentioned high tech. I know the simulation industry is a big deal in the quarter. My son's heading to go do that at UCF. I know energy is a big deal. We've got the Solar Energy Center here. We're always looking for new energy stuff. There's certainly a lot of aeronautical aviation stuff going on. What else can we be looking at here in Brevard?
Well, one example is Embraer, located here. They're building a facility now, 200 jobs, $53 million capital investment. That's the new very light jets that they're building,
okay.
The Phenom 100 and 300. There's also avionics, Beyond Aviation. General aviation, but the one that is that of companies that are growing and making job announcements is the renewable energy sector. And that's not just solar. It's wind. It could be turbines tied to that. It could be biomass. Mm. The solar could be tied to energy storage. And this is not just a Florida issue. There is one impediment for us getting that, and that's because we don't have an energy policy which creates that demand.
Okay.
And when you see companies that are announced where they're going, it's states that have an energy policy. And until we have an energy policy that creates that local demand, which is unusual and different from all traditional corporate relocation factors, that's what sets us apart.
What's an example of an energy policy that we need?
An energy policy would be similar to that as a state, we want a certain percentage of our energy to be based on renewables.
Okay.
So
up in the Midwest, a lot of it's ethanol and corn-based because of the corn economy and all that.
Well, the main ones are solar companies. I'll give you an example. Okay. SunTech, the world's largest Chinese manufacturer of photovoltaic cells. Okay. In an era where companies are going to China. China came here. They went to Arizona. And in their press release, they said, because of good schools, Florida has that, because of the quality of life or something to that effect, we have that. And the last thing they said is because of an energy policy.
Wow.
So they're being attracted to that because that creates the demand.
And so immediately that tells me, okay, who in our legislative world knows about this? And we're in the middle of the session. It's too late this year.
Well, I don't know. The EDC is my board of directors have charged me to work on this with my fellow EDOs in regards to let the state of Florida recognize this. I think what's happened is the energy policy has gotten wrapped up, and it's a green versus non-green issue. It's this versus that. And all I wanted to be able to do is to stop for a minute and say, do you understand that where we spend millions of dollars, not the EDC, but the state, in trying to find companies that want to relocate, I've talked to 8 companies. Photovoltaic companies that said we would consider relocating here if you had an energy policy.
Wow.
So it's almost a bird in the hand. So we're working on that. I don't think it's over yet. We've been to Tallahassee and talking to a lot of senators, and we'll continue to do that. But we have to decide. So that's the byproduct of an energy policy. What's good about it, if you look at the traditional skill demands of these companies, they align very closely to technical skill demands that we have at the Space Center.
Technicians and engineers.
Yes,
both.
Indeed. Yes. Mm-hmm.
On quality inspectors.
Exactly.
And the whole nine yards.
Exactly.
So, well, and you mentioned the energy policy state. You're doing your best for Space Coast, and I know that there's an Orlando EDC, and there's mm-hmm. probably a Tampa one, and there's little regional ones, and then there's certainly all the chambers out there doing their thing. Not that they're economic development, but everyone's out there pushing, fighting for their business. Do we get along?
Oh, we get along really well, but I love the movie Godfather 2, and you know when they all come together and sit at the table,
right.
That's kind of how it is. I mean, we all want to say, okay, if there's a project we can all get something from, we'll do it. But at the end of the day, we're competitors, and I'm going to work as hard to get a company to locate in Brevard County versus Tampa. But I'm being facetious, but
yeah, but I'm just trying to picture which character you are and what outfit are you wearing and
right.
What kind of an accent do you have?
That's right. But you know, we share advertising. We go on joint ventures to trade shows. We also I'll be going with them for the simulation DC trip to make sure that the nation understands that simulation is important, not just for Orlando. The
right.
same way they've come to us in Space Day
right.
when Jacob Stewart was there, ahead of the Central Florida partnerships. So we all work together. We know that economics is not tied to any particular political boundary, but at the end of the day, we're competing for jobs.
And let me ask you this final question, a little different bent here, and you got about a minute. No-2 was a great success, and so I want to ask you real quick, as you see the future, the Naval Ordnance Test Unit at the Cape and Patrick Air Force Base mm-hmm. in general, not going anywhere?
No, and in fact, I'm encouraged about more coming here, but let me use that as an example. What I said earlier is that what we do is we work to bring jobs into the area or mitigate challenges. And what we did there is we didn't wait until BRAC was announced and No-2 was on the list.
Mm-hmm.
We had worked with the Navy. We worked with the Department of Defense. We had gone to the Pentagon for several years prior to that, because once the BRAC issue comes up, you can't work with the military. Talking about what it is we can do, we became very familiar with all the factors, all the driving parts of it. And when No-2 was on the list, we were able to fully understand the BRAC criteria and use that as an argument that the BRAC criteria did not reflect what No-2 was there. So the closing was really under false, analysis.
Okay.
And we're able to turn around. So that's an example of mitigating the challenge.
Outstanding work. Well, Linda, we're going to say goodbye to you. Thanks so much for being on the show with us. Obviously a lot more to talk about and more to react to once we learn more about where the budget's going.
Indeed.
And the president. So Linda, thanks, and say hello to your staff for me. You got great people over there.
I do. Thank you.
Good. Thanks. saying goodbye to Linda Weatherman. Well, let's wrap up with some other notes of items to look forward to this week. By the way, on Thursday, April 1st, I just felt like I had to tell you, I'll be talking about our space program to the Merritt Island Rotary Club. I promise no April Fool's Day jokes. The luncheon event will be at noon at the Piccadilly Circus Restaurant in the Merritt Island Square Mall. My thanks goes out to Jimmy Vickers for the invitation and the chance to meet with the Merritt Island Rotarians. Also this week, doing a little more serious note, want to offer my best wishes to Jews and Christians everywhere who will be observing some very special celebrations this week. For Christians, Palm Sunday is tomorrow. That leads to Easter, of course, next Sunday. And for our Jews, Passover begins at sunset this Monday and continues through the week. But whatever you believe, I hope you'll use this week to reflect on your heritage and your faith. And by doing so, renew your spirit and be thankful for all you have. As for me, I do fall more into the Easter category. In addition to watching the Ten Commandments on TV this week, once again, we'll be marking the holiday in part with my annual ritual of calling my mother to ask her for instructions on how to hard-boil eggs so that the kids, even if they are all in college right now, can dye them and decorate them for Easter, a big tradition in our house. So that said, have a great week. Finally, by the way, next week on Space Talk, we'll be taking a look back at some space history as a number of noteworthy anniversaries are lining up, including the 40th anniversary of the flight of Apollo 13. We're going to stroll down memory lane and tell you how you can plug into some local celebrations. And plus, by the way, if all goes well, by this time next week, we will be well into the countdown to launch of the Space Shuttle Discovery, which is set to fly at 6:21 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Monday, April 5th. We'll spend some time previewing that mission for you, and you certainly won't want to miss it. Only four more flights to go. Their helium valve problem fixed. So, again, NASA this week cleared that launch for Monday, April 5th, during the Bill Mix Show, I might add. We'll certainly have live launch coverage. Well, that's it for today. Thanks for listening. Space Talk is sponsored by United Space Alliance and is a production of Mylas Solutions. Aaron Michaels is our chief engineer on the bridge, and I'm Jim Banky. We'll talk to you again real soon. Now, don't go anywhere. Dan Connery is next as live and local radio continues on a Saturday afternoon right here on WMMB.